Righto, buddy boarders. Bloody, I'm sick of quarterlies. I've had a gut full of them this month.
We're looking
forward to no quarterlies.
Guess today, what, buddy? It's the last day.
Oh,
except for whatever losers put it up tonight.
I hate the last 2 days when every bastard decides to put them in because they're...
At least you read about 10 of them today because I read one or two.
Here's a question. Like, why, if you can be consistently late every quarter and get it out on the 30th or the 31st, why can't you consistently get it out on, say, the 16th?
We will presume you're trying to hide something.
Why? Like, but they can consistently get it out on the same day at the end of the month. Anyway, whatever. You can tell we're frustrated by reading quarterlies. Right, so who's today? IGO, quick rip through them.
On that point, Matty, why don't we give a gold star to whichever company puts out the fastest quarterly next quarter?
Pantoro put out a quick one.
Nah, someone beat them. I think WA won. But
quick for them. Yeah. Maybe he's trying to get his performance rights in quicker.
Oh.
Maybe.
Anyway.
Who do we have? We've missed Sandfire today, but I'll quick comment about them. Who else on quarter? Mac. God, geez, didn't that send you into a confusing little whirlwind there, JD? Anyway.
Into headbutting the wall.
Eris. News out of Azure. Interesting. Entriato, Caroon, and Cyprium. I don't know why I've put Cyprium in here, but it's interesting.
I'm interested, though.
Anyway, let's start with IGO. Let's just do a quick summary, courtesy of shitloads of emails I got sent. 70, key one, $70 still went out the door for Cosmos, even though Cosmos is in ramp down to care and maintenance and forecasting another $50 out the door next quarter. So I would assume, as you said, JD, probably got to pay people out, contractors out, and things like that. So about 12 million a year care and maintenance?
12 to 15, yeah. That's
just some dumbass will buy that for sure, I reckon.
Yeah. Is it these sort of assets sort of, you know, yeah, they kind of they give you the, like, they're kind of perfect for private equity. You know, pick them up on the down low and ride out the cycle and, you know, sell them in a new market with different supply and demand dynamics.
Dismantle the shaft and sell the steel or something? Oh, no, there's not much. I don't know. There's still, there's a big fucking, if you could sell a hole, it'd be good. That is there. So they actually got a divvy for the TLEA JV, the one, the Tianchi JV. So that resumed this quarter. Only $25, pissy amount really, but they would get a lot more of a dividend if it wasn't for the Kwinana downstream, because even though that Kwinana improved 55% on production to 954 tonnes of lithium hydroxide. And they've also got 3,200 tonne awaiting sales. But EBITDA losses, it declined in favourably down to negative. They only lost 63 mil EBITDA, which was 100 mil improvement
only
from quarter on quarter. So that's where that divvy gets chewed up. So you'll see on the waterfall chart that they break up Nova, Forrestania, Cosmos, but the Greenbushes and Kwinana are all in that TLEA dividend bit. So now that Kwinana, the train one, is having a major shutdown in September quarter in the aim of improving productivity and reliability. So major shutdown sounds, there wasn't any scope on how long it would take. I'm not sure if you mentioned it in the call or not, but that's the train, because train two is still in early work stage. So
to improve productivity, so it can go from producing nothing to producing something?
Maybe it'll go from producing sweet fuck all to fuck all.
Oh, okay.
So that'll be a bit better.
Gotcha.
But yes, go Aussie downstream.
No word on how much that's going to cost them either.
Nah, there wasn't much
not in the note,
context in the announcement on it. So Greenbushes, so spod sales of 183,000 tonne. So that lagged what they actually produced by 35%, but they've got Tianchi have agreed to buy 200,000 tonne of sales out of from the mine, which that seems to be most of the inventories. That's going to chew up most of the spod concentrate inventory. So,
and that's using that pricing mechanism, the reflecting back the month across the four.
Yeah.
Bench.
Yeah.
Bench,
so I think I worked for 200,000 tonne at, what was it, 1,000 $1,000 a ton. Spod was it was about 320 million. So what IGR gets a quarter of that of the revenue. So
So Maddie, if you remember that report that we spoke about a couple weeks ago, that independent expert report, one of the key aspects was that the grade will, wind down quicker than the company sort of forecast over time. And you can see the grade of ore mined here has come down from fourth quarter 2023, so not 9 odd months ago, 2.89% to this quarter 2.5% on average.
Yeah, and I think the ore processed went down. I think it was 2.2% last quarter, so to 2.1. So it must be blending it. But tell you what, Dave, you'd take that in. You'd take 2.1, wouldn't you?
You would. Makes it all the more a head scratcher, considering that they reduced production.
Well, JD, you can see why it is the best spod mine in the world. Based on that, is you look at their C1 costs, 386 per dry metric ton. Pilbara Minerals 675, so a bit over half of what the operating cost is. So grade is king. Nova, back to the good old nickel, the bloody ugly stepsister.
At least Nova's the pretty looking one of the ugly ones.
it's not bad. Not bad. Can pick up.
Still misguided.
Yeah, but the old weather impacts, so blew out a mill shutdown. So I heard in the call that Forrestania is becoming increasingly difficult as it approaches the end of its life. So anyway, the IGO paid out $83 in dividends and remained cash neutral at $276 with no debt. So that is the IGO. Buddy,
I bet they wish they had copper right now, Matty.
They've got a couple of thousand ton coming out at Nova.
Do they?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Copper's a byproduct there.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, but it's not as much. The way nickel's going, and even though nickel's returned a bit, maybe the bugger all copper might be worth more than the nickel if it keeps going up. But anyway, Sandfire, not much to report out of there, but, mate, paste pipe blockage. It happens.
It does.
Who would have thought? So Matza actually produced more copper quarter on quarter, but the zinc was down considerably because the paste pipe blockage saw them have to go to another mining area, which was copper only, instead of focusing on the higher grade area, which was copper and zinc. So that high grade material has been deferred into the next quarter. Sounds like it's been rectified.
You've talked about paste pipe blockages for Sandfire before, just at a different asset.
Mm. Oh, it happens, but some companies don't think it's possible. So,
zinc has been flying as well, so almost 4% up overnight.
Zinc is starting to smell like roses instead of stinky zinky.
Happy people.
Anyway, that's what's bloody going on there. What else? Let's continue on. That was just a little quick
thanks, Matty.
Power sesh before we turned the thing on. So can't bloody hang shit on them then not talk about them when they don't do as bad.
Ravensort, give that one a quick mention while we're on the topic of nickel.
Bloody shithouse for all the poor people that work down there, work and live down there.
So, yeah, pretty horrible. I mean, it's going to have a pretty awful effect on the town of Ravensort. It's a nice town, Ravensort. It's good community. Nice, lots of like infrastructure as well, like community stuff, because it was once upon a time a BHP asset and BHP spent money and just make pretty parks and all that sort of stuff. Unfortunately, First Quantum is going to be putting Ravy on care and maintenance, and unfortunately, 330 jobs going to be lost. Pretty big hit this one. So Ravensthorpe going into care and maintenance, that'll make it three of these old school HPALs going by the wayside in WA now. There's Coors, Yulong, and now Ravy, the first two abandoned in earlier nickel troughs, of course. And yet our Daya commentators on yesterday's video, mate, they reckon the Japanese, they want to help build some more HPALs for good measure and try again with WA nickel laterite. Alrighty then.
Fuck, that is on the back of that, like that talk, that is there something coming that is just going to blow our minds with what the Japanese want to do to start doing shit?
Don't know.
Because based on what we talked about with Ardea, and as you said, the word on, was it word on the decline about chalice?
I don't know. I feel like until you see anything, you just take it over with a grain of salt, because it's like one agreement is like, okay, well, this could just be like someone's just like doesn't know how to do an Excel model. But if you see it twice, you're like, what's going on here?
Yeah, yeah, mate. We've got our eye on it. We're not – maybe 1 + 1 doesn't equal window anymore. So what's on The Big Short? He's like, 1 + 1 equals fish. Yeah, so anyway, thinking of all the people down in Ravensthorpe. So, Azure, the Azure. FIRB approvals received. God, why didn't I load up a CFD at $3.30?
It came in hot, didn't it? So I think the stock was trading about $3.40, Maddie, and then the news comes out, it's in a halt for, you know, 10 or 20 minutes, and then bang, straight up to $3.70. So FIRB approval, the takeover is imminent now. They've got the second court date tomorrow afternoon. Looks done and dusted. Looks like, you know, all this is just, you know, going through the motions from now on. I'd imagine the ARBs that did load up, Maddie, unfortunately not you, would be licking their lips on that.
Old Tony Rivera's he's just booked a table at Nobu for tonight and getting some of the most expensive sake going around, apparently, I've heard.
Wouldn't put it past him. On the flip side, though, you've got the fundies that listened to a couple well-publicised notes that went out a couple of weeks ago now, and they will be kicking themselves, especially if they went one further and went short on the stock. We saw there was about 6 and a bit million shares still sold short.
Oh, jeez.
When we last checked, you know, no squeeze today. $3.70 is where it's going to come out. It's happening pretty imminently, but they'll be pretty eager to close out those positions.
We actually read a copy of that dealer note. Mate, the author of it, you know who you are. Go have a spell on the sin bin.
Trav's called you out. Alrighty, and there's more on the takeover front. Tieto, this is a bit of a quirky one. So the directors there have changed their mind. They're now recommending shareholders accept the Zaljin offer. And, you know, the bids come in well below the independent experts range. We've sort of seen this happen in the past, although you've also had the commodity run quite significantly since that report was written and the initial bid came in. So obviously there was a kicker from 58 to 68 cents there. What's really changed here is that you've seen a number of the big shareholders start to accept into the offer. So we saw a couple ceasing of substantial notices today. This means that the board has now, you know, reflected on their recommendation to reject and change their mind. You've got Zaljin now holding 42.5% of the company.
Ooh.
So the Tieto directors reflected on that position and they said, you know what, these guys, there's a good chance they're going to be able to control the board, control the direction of the company going forward. We're changing our mind, investors in our company, go and accept or sell on market at a similar price. The wording was just bizarre. The stock was trading pretty rationally, I thought, last week, 67.5 cents when you got a 68 cent, you know, cash coming in the door in a few weeks' time. It's Thursday, so in a couple of days' time when it's locked up, and then 3 weeks after that is when you'd get the cash if you accept. So
it's pretty interesting. Yeah, the recommendation to be accept or sell on market. I don't see that.
But there wasn't any big massive buy order in there on the market take it.
And what isn't it, you know, an investor?
No, like the ARBs would be licking their lips at 66 and a half cents, mate. They'll pick that up like and lock in a 35% annualized return risk-free. Like.
But even the ARBs didn't have a big order in.
Oh,
they were starting to chip away. So the low point was 66 cents. Today's the last day to be able to be accepted for that offer. But you're talking that 2 cent, it might not sound like much, but if you annualize that, that's a fair bit of profit to make in the space of a few weeks. And that's exactly what a lot of these ARBs do. They'll be licking their lips. They'll go and make, like you said, the rough numbers that we did travel was 35% annualized. They mentioned selling at 67.5 cents in the announcement today. But, you know, investors, they didn't know exactly what to do. They think, oh, 66, that's okay, 66 and a half. And, you know, you're kind of shooting yourself in the foot taking that. And at the end of the day, now it looks like another asset is going to be in the hands of the Chinese in Africa. The way these things have gone for well over a decade now.
So are they trying to push people to sell on market to get it above 50 so it's not a big bloody mess with Zaljin less than 50? Why are they doing it?
Don't know. I don't know.
They didn't think they'd have control of the company. They said once this lapses on Thursday, you might not be able to sell. There might not be much liquidity in the stock anymore. These were some of the reasons they gave. So they're saying you may as well just accept it today, like I say, is the last day possible if you want
to. It's a good point you make. With Zhao Jin being so close to 50 there, if they actually get greater than 50, this automatically gets extended for another 2 weeks, by the way. So,
yeah.
Anyway.
There. Righto, moving on. K-A-R, Karoon.
Mate, this one.
Educate me, gentlemen. Jesus Christ.
This one had the capital raising of the year last year.
Thank God for Stockness Monster, because I'd.
You know, I don't know about this one.
I don't know about this one.
Really?
Bloody.
Had a good article in the Fin as well,
too. Oh. There's too many companies. Need to consolidate.
Oil and gas world, this one.
Ah, right. Yeah. That'd be why. Give me some history.
Well, it's got me excited, Matty. So shout out to Mondi and Overjumped on Twitter for flagging this one to me. Look, it looks to me like we've got some shareholder activism unfolding now at Karoon.
Okay. Now we're interested.
Involving Stam.
Our good friends.
Good friends. Like, of course, Stam, who featured in the Fumble in the Jungle until recently. And Sandon Capital, another activist shareholder. So some context first. Karoon Energy, ASX-listed oil and gas producer. They got their break with the acquisition of Bornea in Brazil. But then they made some headlines last year picking up their second producing asset. This time it was an interest in the US Gulf of Mexico called Who Dat, which you have to say is the world's best name for an asset.
Bit like Manny Dat's.
Who Dat?
News article True Dat.
It's True Dat, yeah. It's a good one. Yeah. Anyway, the acquisition came with a big price tag. It was US $720 million, and Karoon immediately raised $480 million in Aussie dollars.
Bloody hell.
And in what I would declare it as the most disgracefully executed capital raising of the year. Shout out to the superstars of MacCap. Why do I call it the world's worst executed cap raise? Look at this chart, right? The stock closed at $2.39 on Tuesday, the 14th of November, the day before they reveal the acquisition. A Street Talk article pops up the next morning disclosing the deal Karoon were embarking on. It's just one catch. Karoon was still trading. They weren't in halt yet. And this is leaked in Street Talk. And they kept trading for 30 minutes that day until they finally went to halt. So, of course, the stock tanked from $2.39 down to $1.96. Sloppy as all hell. They got the deal done. They acquired their interest in Who Dat. Unfortunately, they quickly downgraded guidance for Who Dat shortly after acquiring it. You see here in the latest quarterly, guidance for CY24 production being revised from 11.2 range from 11.2 to 13.5 million barrels of oil down to 10.5 to 12.5 million barrels of oil. So, you know, you look at that downgrade, like that came like literally like 3 months after the acquisition closed effectively. The news to pay attention to today, though, is that Stam and Sandon are in opposition to some explicit resolutions at the upcoming AGM. I read in Stam's latest letter that Karoon's actually their biggest holding in their fund at the moment. They've got nearly 11% of the fund in Karoon stock right now. Cool. Not Sierra Rutile.
It's a bit more conviction than we see from versus a lot of the other fundies we speak with and chat about.
They're a bit of a different kind of fund, this one.
Yeah.
Your type of fund, Trent.
My type of fund. Yeah. My type of fund.
Flick your CV over. I don't know,
Fred replied to my WhatsApp messages then.
You're in.
Anyway, so look, this annexure in the change of substantial notice, the explicit resolutions that Stam intends to oppose. Look at them there. Specifically, they're opposing, number one, the re-election of Peter Turnbull AM. See the name there? AM. You know you can trust people when they put, you know, an Order of Australia in their title, right? You just I can trust you. You've got letters in your name. Number two, they oppose the adoption of the remuneration report. Number three, they oppose the increase in the fee pool to non-executive directors. Number four, they oppose the issue of performance rights to Dr. Julian Fowles. Again, the doctor, you know, you can trust people with doctor in their name, right? You're just like, oh, you're trustworthy. Anyway, and number five, they oppose the refresh of replacement capacity. So there's more colour to what the activists actually want to do, because an AFR article came out in the middle of the day today, which added some quotes from Stam and also from Sandon. And I'll read out a couple of points, but in general, they're wanting more dividends and they want dividends. It seems like they definitely don't want more acquisitions. So here's some quotes. We believe the company should be prioritizing dividends and buybacks rather than acquisitions and development. We intend to discuss our views with as many shareholders as we can. We also believe management incentives, which we will be voting against, are inappropriate and incentivize suboptimal behavior. Pretty pressing points there. I thought it'd be worthwhile checking some of those points with the specific details. So I went to the notice of meeting that's been put out to shareholders there. On the director rem pool, Karoon want to lift this from 1.2 million total rem pool divided by the directors to 1.5 million. What the fuck?
There you go.
That's pretty out of whack, would have thought, for director rem.
Fuck, I want to get on that board.
That's a fair old mate, paycheck well, for doing nothing.
Well, mate, when you're paying fucking AMs and doctors, you know, like you just get you get a few bonuses for that. Anyway, I'm with the activists on that one. Stam and Sandon combined, they've got 5.6% ownership. They'll likely need a few friends to join them on their crusade if they want to win these resolutions. But I love this stuff, guys. I want to see more of it.
Trav, why don't you pick up 1%? Get on the bandwagon.
It's a fucking billion-dollar company, mate.
Billion and a half.
You have that.
You have 15 bucks flying around.
Yeah. Oh, very good. Right, JD, you went on a bloody, I don't know what I'd describe you've gone through today, but in regards to metals acquisition.
I don't know how to describe it either, mate.
You cared too much.
I did. And I was left scratching my head a bit. And, I'll come to it. But to start with, production for this quarter, not great for the company. But most other aspects actually moved in their favour. So they increased the mine life at the CSA mine. This is Metals Acquisition Corp to 11 years. That was
Limited,
yeah. So that was a good, tick up on the mine life that they'd had. That's a big check from the market for that one. And then in terms of production, they gave guidance for the next 3 years, and that by calendar year 26 is lifting to over 50,000 tonnes. So another check. The market likes that. Now, it's pretty vital that this company has good quarters and good years. Obviously, we went into great detail over the past few months about the, really throwing everything at it to get this deal over the line, the streaming, the debt they took on, the deferred considerations that needed to be paid to Glencore. So they've had a huge tailwind in where the copper price has gone. That wasn't totally reflected in the quarter just past, but I'm sure that'll come into the quarter that we're currently in. And there's one thing to bear in mind when you're looking at Metals Acquisition Corp, and similar to a lot of other companies in the base metal sort of space, that the cash flows can be really lumpy. Investors love consistent, predictable cash flows. So this can be a bit frustrating for people looking at it, but it's just the nature of the ore bodies and these mining companies.
Oh, it's more a nature of the selling
and
of it.
And the shipping, the transport.
You can't. It's not like gold where you can just drive it down to the mint that week sort of thing. There's ships that are, and I think you said what, a ship's worth bloody 20 or 30 million bucks at a time
to
get one ship away.
Yeah. So the production numbers for this quarter, guys, we're talking about just under 9,000 tonnes of copper. That's well below the mark. And then, you see that reflected in the C1 cost ticking up to US $2.15 per pound. That's up 8%. Underground capital development was down substantially, I think off the top of my head, 44-odd% on that one. So what they spoke to there is a big increase in rehab metres, mostly at the shallower levels, leading to extra ground support needed and whatnot.
Yeah, and I think that was separate actually. I think they said there was extra rehab and then but extra ground support needed down the bottom as well.
As well, potentially,
That's how I read it. And look, they said on the call that there was a lot of this was catch up work and will be ongoing. So which gives me the indication that because they've taken it over, they're probably trying to lift the standards underground of that ground support, which is that's without knowing much context and they said it's all ongoing. Rehab's always ongoing, and because it's a freaking huge mine, they're probably tidying it up. So that's good to see. One thing we need more context on is if it's DSI ground support, and we're still lacking that in these ASX announcements, and I think it needs to be – I think I might have to email the ASX.
Yeah, I mean, it's a pretty high pedigree team. I just assumed that's what they were doing. Well, they've just taken over the mine. They're going in and they're making sure the job has been done. Mm. Who knows what Glencore did? These guys want to make sure it's on good footing to earn a lot of money in the coming years.
Surely the biggest commodity – one of the biggest commodity traders and big mine operator in the world would have used DSI.
You'd think so, right?
You would have thought so. Yep. And if sort of Mac want to get to Metals Acquisition Limited, want to get to this level, I believe they have to be doing the same. And I think there's probably a chance that we'll start seeing some amended ASX announcements come out because the use of DSI or not isn't detailed in these announcements. So I think companies get your house in order. start letting us know if you are or are not using DSI. And you never know, it might just come across a bit better in the show. Yeah,
I'm sure we'll see it reflected in costs in the coming quarters.
And our opinion, yep. JD, as well. Thanks, DSI.
So like we said, Maddie, lumpy cash flows. Mac pointed to a US $50 million shipment made just post the quarter end. So the mining costs are felt in the quarter. Cash flow received next.
I'll play that bit to give the money miners a bit of context. Here we go.
Thanks, Mornay. And for those of you who are trying to sort of back calculate a free cash generation during the quarter from operations, I think the point around that $50-odd million were the two shipments right at the end of the quarter and dropped into the first, I think it was the 2nd of April. We have booked all the costs associated with those shipments, but none of the revenue. So if you were sort of lining up on an accruals basis, you would need to put that $50 million back into the revenue line. And so you can see even at $3.87 copper, that was our average price during the quarter, the mine is generating quite strong free cash flow. Clearly at $4.60 copper, the prices are even better. And each of the shipments today is worth around about $28 to $29 million a boatload. So it does make your cash flow somewhat lumpy, but at the end of the day, the mine is generating quite strong free cash flow.
There you go. One thing that you were scratching your head with, JD, and we'd like a bit of context on, saw the C1 cost lift a lot this quarter, but we don't know if that is because of the costs, that includes the costs incurred for that shipment that is about to go out, yep. Or if that is based on the produced.
Yeah,
copper,
is that on?
Is it on copper sold or copper produced?
Yeah, exactly. And just to round out on those sorts of aspects, Maddie, going forward, forecast production for 24 and 25, they're hedging US at about a quarter of their production at $3.72 a pound. Onto the finances, you know, US $127 million in repayments over the quarter. Two-thirds of that was deferred consideration, like I said before, paid to Glencore. They used the ASX listing proceedings, so the IPO money that they got, to pay out most of this. And then Mick spoke about how he likes to run a business, net cash, you know, not rocket science. He clearly wants to pay down the debt as soon as possible. They said at the end of March they had liquidity of US $100 million. And this is to your point, Maddie, what we were speaking about before the show. It bloody winds me up how this company reports. It's very opaque. They cram in heaps of numbers into the quarterly, but they don't actually tell you if the operations earned any money. They tell you they achieved US $3.87 for the copper that they sold. We all know that Glencore is going to take their pound of flesh. That's who the offtake partner is for the life of the project. Like you said, Maddie, we got the C1 cost. We didn't get an all-in sustaining cost. We understand there was a big shipment after the quarter as well. So is that a per pound sold, per pound produced basis? Of course, you can calculate a lot of these numbers with the totals that they've given you, but I think it's just deliberately convoluted. They don't tell you what the final cash position was. They don't tell you what the total drawn amount of debt was. They just say liquidity. I mean, look at the waterfall chart. We'll throw it up on the YouTube now and you can see. What kind of waterfall chart for a mining company doesn't have a standalone bar for operational cash flow of the asset? They've got net OPEX, which they lump in together with IPO payments and interest. But they've got a separate column for the proceeds of the IPO. Just subtract the payments that you gave to the brokers for the IPO there. And then there's no figures attributed on each of the bars either. You just have to estimate what they're for. They only mention in the quarterly that they repaid a revolver. They don't mention that they've actually got another revolver, which they drew down on, which you can see in the waterfall chart. So I couldn't quite piece it together because I listened to the call this morning and I actually liked the sound of the team. Like they spoke well, they weren't overly promotional. They said, you know, it wasn't a great quarter. Here's what we can improve on, A, B and C. And then I just opened up the quarterly and read through it. And I'm like, what's actually going on here? So I couldn't, you know, piece two and two together here. But I think, you know, these guys are a switched on team. They're a pretty high pedigree team. They know what they're doing. They can just report and relay the information in the announcement in much more plainer English.
You know what I'm keen to do, JD, ahead of next quarterly season?
Tell me.
We're going to write our money of mind rules on how to do a proper waterfall chart.
pretty straightforward. We absolutely should.
Oh, yeah, there's been some dude, the bloody Bellevue one. Jeez, that was just a piss take this quarterly.
Anyway, you start with cash balance and you end with cash balance.
Yeah.
Remelius's was easy to understand because they made shitloads of cash.
Not rocket science.
Anyway.
Oh, you know what? You know the thing you forget about Metals Acquisition Limited when you wonder when it's
you can still call it MAC. That's the ticker.
Mm. Oh, is it? Yeah, I suppose MAC. Yeah. Is, you know, just remember back about how it come about, this whole MAC the SPAC thing and the people involved, Mr. Bill Beament in the pipe.
All the superstars.
And Nev Power and everything. And it's like, I always think it's like, things are ticking along. Things are probably going a bit quiet for develop, but I still believe that was all part of a bigger plan. And what is that bigger plan going to be one day?
Yeah, of course. M&A got a mention in there. They'll be disciplined in their approach.
Yeah,
I reckon we'll see. I found the part of the call kind of interesting where Mick talked about the it was pretty candid in admitting that the team on site underground were probably in the lowest quartile of productivity of Australian mines. And so a big focus is actually just improving the productivity. How many calls have you listened to where someone's been like, yes, my team is shit and they will get better?
Oh, fuck, that'd be – but tell you what, to that team that's working there, fucking there's not many people that have the bloody balls to work there at CSA because it is fucking deep and fucking hot. And it is hard work. Totally. So it would be one of the most difficult mines for an operator to work at.
And Glencore absolutely knew that a smaller company like MAC could operate it better than they could.
Yeah.
No doubt about it.
Golden Grove was the same. Deep and spread out. No, this one's not as spread out, but it's very deep. Once you go deep, it's just hard work. It's just hard work getting down there, just getting to work. And then you've got to leave so much earlier to get out.
Yeah.
Like it's just hard work compared to working in a shallower mine. Mm. So
much easier.
Especially throw some heat in there. Yeah, so it might have been a bit harsh on him there.
on the theme of copper, Matty, you had a dive into cyprium.
Yeah, why'd I look at this? I think it was someone said
the stock was up 20%.
It just keeps going up.
Yeah, and
more than doubled this month on the back of these lifting copper prices, the good old Nifty project. 1 million tonne of contained copper, boys, and in Australia, listed on the ASX. This is what the market is looking for, isn't it?
Is it?
Though, Travis, Jesus Christ, ain't the history of the great Nifty mine going to make the extraction of this, let's say, 800,000 tonne of contained copper in the sulfide extremely bloody challenging. So pull it up on YouTube. Here's what the deposit looks like. Here's what and this is from the latest mineral resource estimate. So if you look at this block model cross section and where that pit is, so this is planning to eventually be one big massive friggin' pit, huge. And you can see the old underground stopes and development voids at the base of it from the old Aditya Birla days. That's obviously where the high grade stuff is, because that's where undergrounds go. You can see the top of it, the block model cross-section, the blue bit, that's where the pit will start getting at first. That's only 0.2 to 0.8%, the top of the chalcopyrite right there. That'll be mined in the early years. Then you've also got some sinkholes to work around. They resulted from the previous operator mining the underground faster than backfilling the voids, and that is what happens. So
shout out to Aditya Birla.
That was 100% was Aditya Birla. That is fact.
When you see that kind of mining method, Matty, what part of your, you know, the internal miner within
really,
you,
it's
you
not
get
a,
angry?
It's not a method. It's an attitude. It's like there's just a method done incorrectly. So it's anyway. So
can you fix it?
Oh, Jesus Christ. It's should be bloody. There's always a way, but Jesus, as Stored it says, there is always a way. Depends on how much cash you got. Mm. So it's hard to get a good gauge at this stage of what this big massive pit will look like and how much interaction there will be in and around these sinkholes, the old underground development, and the stope voids. But Jesus Christ, it is going to be a planning nightmare to figure out how to mine everything without losing machinery into voids. And so overall for Cyprium, copper price is going up, share price is going up, but we're waiting to hear about what the plan is for this small – there's two plans that got on the go. So one is this small-scale restart of the solvent extraction electrowinning plant to reprocess the existing heap leach materials. And then the number two plan is the large-scale surface mine to access the big sulfide resource, which will be a bit of a bloody head fuck. So, yeah, a lot of mate, tell you what, it's a big thing to take on.
If I'm looking at that wireframe there and you can see the three big sinkholes, so that there, what I'm looking at there is that's the giant open pit that they talk about.
So that I think based on that, there's a subsidence zone cone. So I think they're the sinkholes, but they've got like an area, they've put an area of influence around it,
which is effectively
a no-go, no mining zone or no-go zone. Not sure where they're coming out and like, I don't know if they're going to have to, because I know.
How can you extract
them? I'm pretty confident they are not backfilled at the moment, and those underground stope voids that I showed you that the pit's going to go down to, they are, not all of them are backfilled either. And the hardest thing with, to try and backfill all these things, like even when you, like say you wanted to pour concrete or paste or something into it, it doesn't just fill up, like you can't just put it in one hole and it just sort of fills up. It's got this, I think it's called a beach angle. So because it's thick, you pour it in here and there's a bit of a taper in how it settles. So it's not going to just
– it won't fill
– it doesn't fill – like it's not like water. It doesn't just fill up flat like that. So you can't actually get a tight fill everywhere unless you put a shitload of holes in.
Yeah.
So, whether they've got to backfill these and then mine beside them and down and don't know. There's a lot of look at that. I'm looking forward to seeing that study when it comes out. So
yeah.
Tell you who's a bloody – who'd win out of this. This would be an absolute – dream job for K-Drill.
Tell me why.
So, look, the mineral resource did say they need a better understanding of the resource. That obviously involves exploration drilling.
Yeah.
But, mate, all these voids when K-Drill are drilling, that's 3 metres. They just start bloody punching diamond through it, hit a void, boom, straight through to the other side, keep going, might get an extra 10, 20 bloody for the ticket. Mate, they'll be loving it.
Forgive me if my understanding of mining is this bad that I'm going to sound like an idiot, but like K-Drill drill the hole with diamond and it hits a void, right? Can you just shove a pipe down there and pump paste through that pipe and fill the void?
They could.
K-Drill can fix the engineering dilemma at Nifty.
Well, I think you need a bit of a bigger hole to do that.
Oh. Yeah. Actually,
that's not about that. That is not the dumbest thing you've actually ever said, Trap, because they can actually drill the exploration holes, probably hit a void, but then they can use that hole as a pilot and chuck a bigger bit on and ream it out, and that could actually become a paste backfill hole.
Okay, mate.
That is not the dumbest thing. I don't know how RC and all that one they go once they don't get the flushing and the once they hit the void sort of, but diamond I reckon might work. Anyway, mate, K-Drill are up for everything because even with those drill rods, they've actually got, believe it or not, I just found this out, they've got technology that can – so once they pierce those voids with the diamond gear, they actually got their own cavity monitoring technology. They drop down the drill string and that can monitor inside those voids when the drill string is inside them. So that is
– that's actually pretty cool.
Yeah, it's fucking handy. So they're like one – though. Mate, they've got the paste fill sorted. They monitor the voids, get a proper bloody survey of it, drill it, mate. Give K-Drill a buzz about any of the other whole suite of other exploration drilling technologies they've got. What a business.
It's like keyhole surgery, but for mines.
Yeah, Dr. Rhino Sullivan, you'd say. Anyway, that's a bloody go Nifty. Right, Aeris. Geez, I'm on a roll here.
Keep it going, mate. You're hot.
Bloody, I can see how you feel sometimes, JD, when you fucking have to talk heaps.
What happened to the good guys at Aeris?
Went backwards $3 for the quarter.
Yep.
So sitting at $19 in the bank. And this value has come down apparently, $73.9 million in trade payables and other creditors. I think receivables was only about $8 million on gold and everything. So
working capital delta there. Yeah. But they've got debt on top of that to Soul Patts, don't they?
Yeah, so they got $40 fully drawn to Soul Patts, who is the 30% shareholder. Mm-hmm. So it probably saves them a bit because Soul Patts is exposed both ways. But then,
well, I think Soul Patts refied recently a little bit and upped the interest rate. So maybe Soul Patts is just thinking, I'll get as much cash out as possible.
Well, that might explain the $6.4 out the door in financing costs. So I assume some of that is interest.
It's probably all interest because I think it's only ever been 40. That might all be interest. I don't think they're paying back.
But that wouldn't be for a quarter. If it's 20%, what's that, $8 million? Oh. That's $8 for the year.
Yeah, you're probably right.
So there's a bit of interest in there. Because I remember that, and this is after they raised $30 in the December quarter. So at this rate, they'll have to raise again unless they get cash flow positive. They're saying Tritton is going to deliver this quarter, and so they're anticipating it will meet guidance. But look at what they're doing to make it happen. So I'll go through these little corrective actions, you'd say. So because they blamed obviously poor equipment availability and lack of skilled labour or low people missing. Mm. So they're getting additional trucks and loaders. Some rentals and some from Jaguar, rental gear and transportation and everything. That costs money on top of what they've probably got. Contract labour obtained to fill roles. Contract labour costs more than having people employed by you. Mining sequence at Murrawombie changed from bottom up to top down. Now, I assume that this means that pillars, they'll be starting to leave pillars between the stopes rather than doing, if they're doing bottom up, I'd anticipate that involves rock fill, cemented rock fill or paste fill or something. So I suppose this is cheaper because you do save money on the backfill, like because you need a loader to tip shit in there and everything, but you are sterilising 15 to 20% of the ore body. So you're robbing Peter to pay Paul a bit, but it is cheaper to do it. Not sure of the reserves there. So probably not a bad thing. Mining at Avoca Tank transitioning to double lift stopes. All good in theory. So double lift stopes means you're just taking them twice as high and possibly skipping out the intermediate level. So you're saving on development. All good in theory, but double lift stopes do expose the hanging wall twice as much. So you got double the length, increasing the chance of unplanned dilution. And if you are skipping out that intermediate level, the drill and blast has a bigger chance of fucking up if you don't blast the bottom half to height. I know this better than anyone. I completely fucked up a double lift stope at DeGrussa and that copper is still sitting there. So engineers at Aeris, if you are listening, make sure the bottom pulls to height and make sure you overlap your downhulls and your upholes by a couple of metres. Give yourself the best chance and make sure you prep it properly. Do not do what I did. Anyway, the DeGrussa one wasn't that high grade, so all good. No, that one actually, the one that I fucked up was actually one of the lower grade ones.
Relative to the other bits.
3.5%.
Yeah, fuck all.
The other ones were 5, so.
How much money do you reckon you cost them?
Oh, shit, I added it up. Bloody, it's not too much.
Couple God. Bucks?
God, they're bloody. They obviously haven't learnt from block and paste pipes, so like, I don't know what I did. overall, when I look at these things, and I'm not talking about back in the day. I'm starting to sound like one of those bloody washed up back in the day. But Jesus Christ, once you get into the end of financial years, you see some frigging stupid shit done at mines sometimes just to meet guidance. I've been at mines where they just change the whole sequence at a high stress mine just to get it, like skip out a level, start mining down here, and that intermediate level just squeezes, and then you go in and you're rehabbing it for months afterwards, stripping it, rebolting it and everything just so they could
meet guidance.
They went and got the easy shit, and then you spend the next 2 quarters catching it up, get the mine back on track, and then what do you know? You get to the end of the next financial year and they're short on ounces and they fucking do it again. And you just, it's like just bloody do it. Oh, I'm not saying this is that sort of stuff, but I hope it isn't the case for Aeris that they're just doing something just to meet guidance, just to appease the share market.
Well, you know what causes that, Matty?
The share market.
Bad incentives. Because, you know, the ops people.
Investors.
It's probably whoever's, you know, mine manager or whatnot, that their KPIs are tied to production ounces as opposed to cash margin.
No, it's not the mine managers. It's always comes from corporate usually. Right. Because sometimes it's them, but it's usually the corporate office that are telling the GM, you've got get to more do ounces. This, you need to get this.
It's not just specific to mining companies. You see it across all businesses. Oh, you know, we'll take a portion off the invoice if you pay it now, you know, in the next couple of weeks instead of paying it down then so we can book it now.
Mm. I'll tell you, like, the one truth about mining, what's the best thing? The best thing for the mine is not the best thing for the client and not the best thing for the contractor. So what's best for the mine ain't best for the share market usually. So I'm not saying this is happening here, but I hope it works out.
Yep.
We'll see next quarter.
And Aeris is a case in point in talk. You know, they've 2.5x'd in the past month or so because they're such a high cost producer. They got beaten up today, I think down 14-odd% on this quarterly. But what we've seen in the past month or so is purely a result of that shift in the copper price.
Yeah, and look, God, they were down to
and a bit in gold.
They were down to 9 cents. God, you wouldn't have even thought of buying them. But then they tripled in the last quarter. So,
which sets them up well to do a cap raise to fix their balance sheet.
Again. Man, imagine if you do two cap raises within friggin'
30 bucks in November.
30 bucks in November.
And your share
December.
Price goes up in the interim. That's pretty, I mean, it's all market, isn't it?
Yeah.
Anyway, good stuff, fellas.
We'll wait and see. Oh, geez, pump. Oh, I'll come home strong there, eh, boys?
Good stuff, mate. Tell the partners to thank.
Thanks for your help, Trav.
No worries.
Your segment was really good.
I feel like this was still last week when I was away.
All right. You can do, Trav, you can do the partnership.
Fuck. All right. We got Verify, Communicate in 3D, Get Wet Solutions, Innovative bladder Tanks for Mobile Water Storage, DSI Underground, Silverstone, Anytime Exploration, WA Water Boards, Brooks Airways, and K-Drill.
Hooteroo.
Hooteroo, money miners.
The information contained in this episode of Money of Mine is of general nature only and does not take into account the objectives, financial situation, or needs of any particular person. Before making any investment decision, you should consult with your financial advisor and consider how appropriate the advice is to your objectives, financial situation, and needs.